What about Joe Crane? You knew Joe Crane well.
Well, I grew up with Joe Crane from first grade on, and he was something else. He was a big time charter from the time he was in the fifth grade, I think. Always trying to be a big shot. All through high school, by the time he was a sophomore or junior in high school, he was always going out with college boys, and he pledged to the Sigma Chi fraternity when he was a junior in high school. And I think the main reason the Sigma Chi pledged him was because he had a big car. His dad ran the cigar store down here, Stevenson and Crane, and he had a big 7-passenger Buick sedan. And at that time, practically no college boys had cars. It was just unheard of. Nobody had any money for cars. But Crane had access to his dad's Buick sedan, and he would take the Sigma Chi's down to DePaul for weekend parties that were always going on down there. That's where the girls were, of course. And he had a young colored boy here by the name of Chink Rice, and he got an old policeman's cap, put it on Chink, and he would be his chauffeur, and they would drive the boys to Greencastle in the 7-passenger car. he was just something else. There was no question about it. Another time, later on, he was always carrying a $100 bill. And back in the 30s, a $100 bill was one of those things you only saw at banks as a rule. And there probably wasn't a merchant coffee bill that could change a $100 bill at any one time. But Joe always carried a $100 bill, and that way he didn't have to pay for much. Somebody else would always pick up the tab. And one time, a bunch of us were at a state dance in Indianapolis at what was at the time called the Hotel Continental. I can't remember. It was up on North Meridian, up by the Athletic Club. And we were there. It was a spring night, and there were three or four fellows from Crawfordville had gone over to join the festivities. None of us had dates. And we knew that Crane was going to be there, and we lay in wait for him. And a bunch of us had gotten together, and we got changed for a $100 bill. And we went to the bar at the Continental, and Crane was there, and he very kindly said, "Come on, boys, line up here. I'm going to buy the drinks." Well, we all lined up, and we bought about the most expensive drink we could get. And I think he was a little worried about that. Then he pulls out his $100 bill on the bar. They were in the bar in Indianapolis. He could change a $100 bill at that time in 1933 or 4. So the bartender says, "I'm sorry, I can't change that bill." Well, a group of us said, "Well, here we can." And we got our resources pooled. Well, Crane had to buy the drinks, and it cost him $20 or thereabouts. And in 1934, that was a lot of money. But he never pulled that $100 bill thing again on the crowd from Crawfordsville.
He went on to fame, didn't he?
Oh yeah, he went on to fame. When he got out of school, he went to Steck store and bought four or five suits. One of them was an ice cream sculler, a white flannel suit. Boy, he was decked out in full Cleveland, white shoes, socks, shirt, tie, the whole bit, the white suit. And he was a real dog. And he went to Chicago, and from there he went to Hollywood. And he got some publicity, and he always referred to himself as a Hoosier or an Indiana tobacco heir. And of course, the tobacco heir, his dad had a cigar store in Poole Room here, you know. That never appeared in the papers. And, I can't remember all the funny. I can remember when we were in college, he would go to the Indiana Rook Ballroom, which was one of those big ballrooms where the big bands around the country played, and it was over the Indiana Theater. It was quite a nice place. It was not a honky-tonk by any means. And all the young people went up there, and it was on four or five nights a week. And on every once in a while, you'd get up there, and you'd hear somebody, out in the lobby, there was a big grand piano, and you'd hear somebody playing the first half a dozen chords of Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor. And You knew damn well it was Crane, because he knew the first five, six bars of that. And that's all he knew. And people come around, and he'd play the first five or six bars and get up and slam the cover with the keys and walk away. You know, the girls come up and say, play more, play more. No, I've had too many people here. And he grabbed the first available girl, and they were all on the dance floor. But he was something.
Well, he came back to town after he married Lana Tanner Turner, didn't he?
Yeah. I didn't. I only saw him two or three times after that. I saw him in Hollywood during the war. We were out there. I was stationed out west. We stopped at his restaurant and saw him one time, a place called Lucy's. He was a front for the restaurant. I don't think he owned it. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. And we saw him there, and then the last time I saw him was in Chicago. At that time, he was running this Contiki chain of restaurants. And I saw him up there and talked to him for a few minutes. He calmed down a great deal as he got older. He was much less showy and more serious, and you know, he'd made quite a name for himself and was doing pretty good, mm-hmm. pretty well. But
well, any more characters?
Well, I can't think of it right now. I could name a whole bunch of them, but I've got to run.